podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Anfield Wrap. It's Harriet Pryor hosting this week in the absence of Neil, but I'm joined by another Neil Docking. I've got Rob Gutman and Ian Salmon here with me as well. It's the international break. It's sad we've got no football to talk about, but it is giving us a chance to get stuck into a few other things. And I want to talk about five players within the context of the start of the season, assess their form, their performances and their futures at the club. John will do another five players next week. But just first off, I want to cover off a few other stories from the past week, and starting with the women's game, because it was a great introduction to the WSL season by Liverpool women. I was absolutely petrified before the game. Rob was just saying the odds were 40-1, were they, before?
Apparently so, yeah.
For Liverpool to beat Chelsea, the reigning WSL champions that have won it three times in a row, undefeated in 2022. Neil, you watched the game yesterday. It was some performance by the Reds to stick in it and then come away with the 3 points.
It was. Chelsea have won all these league titles. They've not been up against the Reds, have they?
No.
It was a great opportunity, I think, for the women's game yesterday. So many, you know, with obviously the Liverpool men's team not playing against Chelsea, the eyes of the nation, really. A lot of people, I think, will have been flicking around on Sky to watch football, come across the game. And, you know, I turned on and we were under the cosh, it's fair to say. Lauren James, Reese's sister, was tearing it up on the right wing. And, you know, I feared for the Reds. And then it was a bit of a soft penalty, but you'll take it. And
was it soft? I couldn't really, because I was there watching, so I can't really
the first
see.
One was a bit soft. I think the second one was nailed on.
How many pens were there? I saw Chelsea get one, and
three
then I saw
pens. All the goals were pens.
Every goal was a pen.
Yeah.
But it was some turnaround. I think at that point, 1-0 down, it was like 80-1 against, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, great result. And it looked to me like a pretty big crowd as well. A couple of the stands looked empty. Yeah. Then it looked like one was
packed.
They
had everyone in three, so it's 3,000 there, yeah. Which is a record at that ground for Liverpool women. It was definitely markedly more busy than last season, yesterday you couldn't get parking space, and last season you could just sort of stroll up and just go in last minute. It wasn't like that. So yeah, very, very positive performance. And Katie Stengel with the two penalties, giving us a great start to the season. They're playing Anfield next weekend, so do get your tickets for that. It's the Merseyside Derby. Kids can go for £1 as well. So do make sure that if you're around and you are missing football, that you get yourself there. There was also a post-match show from the game yesterday, so if you want more analysis on the game, do have a listen to that. I just want to cover off one more story, Rob, and that's on Artemelo, because he hadn't played for Juventus since May. So it's no surprise that Klopp didn't want to throw him straight into the mix. But now there's all these rumours that maybe we wanted to let him go already in January, or that we're definitely not going to, you know, buy him at the end of his loan spell. What are your thoughts on this? I don't think we're going to terminate his contract as soon as January. I think he does just still need a bit of time to work out whether he is going to be useful to this Liverpool side.
Yeah, the stories surprised me. I smell mischief-making bullshit here, I call it.
Yeah, so do I.
And I think, and it's coming from some of the Italian sports tabloid media, you know, who we do routinely look down our nose at when we're discussing transfer shows, because they are prepared to say anything when it suits their agenda. I do wonder, there was a bit of noise when he left Juve that, hang on a second, why is such an esteemed coach as Klopp taking a punt on Arthur when we want him out the door? What are we doing wrong? And there was a sort of an implied criticism of the various managers Juve have had, and even of Allegri, who's come under some pressure anyway. So I do wonder if friends in the media of certain people at Juve, it might suit them for there to be a narrative, without being too conspiratorial about it, which I'm being.
I
do wonder if it might, it does suit them to have Arta written off as a bit shit. Yes, okay, on the one hand, that might be a bit soft because they want him off their books financially to a degree. But I do wonder, that might be the club, but I do wonder if certain individuals might be going, do you know what? If he hasn't played yet, let's keep on propagating the story that he's shit. Otherwise, why would that be the case? Because Liverpool clearly haven't bought a player who does have a pedigree despite his problems in Italy, and will have written him off. I mean, what would he have done in 2.5 weeks at Liverpool for them to decide to go back? Did they catch him out till 4 a.m. in clubs 3 nights running? I mean, he has to...
Gave Klopp the V's on his first day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you'd have had to have done something pretty shitty in the first, yeah, in 2.5 weeks. Turning up maybe a bit unfit. They'd have known from the medical just what his level of fitness was. They're well informed. It wouldn't have been a surprise. It's not like he'd walked in with a big beer gut on him and go, Jesus Christ, what have you been doing? Like, we didn't realise. They knew what they were buying. So even if he's under match fitness criteria levels, there's still time to work with him. And in fact, Liverpool have come out and actually briefed themselves through much more credible sources that there's absolutely no intention of sending him back in January. And he's on a special program and all is fine and we should calm down.
Can I just return to your conspiracy theory there?
Go ahead.
And throw in loads of allegedlies and presumptions and things.
Defos, I prefer.
This is great. This is the bit that you edit out because none of it's going to be transmittable. obviously, you know, the idea that they're protecting the coach in some way to make it look like he hasn't dropped one on this, there isn't necessarily a value to protect per se, because am I right in remembering that the transfer of him to Juve didn't necessarily involve as much money, actual real money, as may have
slightly the opposite. Well, I think they wanted to. Barca wanted to show a profit on him, yeah. And in the deal that went the other way to Barca, Pjanic went the other way. Juve wanted to show a profit on him, so in their books, I think I'm right in saying Juve bought Arta at an inflated fee. I mean, it's normally in there in the 60 million euro plus mark. So it's an inflated fee. So if they got rid of him for like a couple of quid, they would be showing a huge loss. Whether that would help them for tax reasons, who knows what the machinations are. But I can put that theory of yours to bed right now, Mr. Sam.
It's a good theory. Yeah,
I loved it while it lasted. I've killed it flat. But I might be wrong. Who knows?
Somebody right, I'm going to move on from the conspiracies and get to the main part of the main show. I didn't even want to talk about Arta that much, but I like that we've gone full force. We're going to start in defence with Van Dijk. And like I mentioned, we're going to talk about five different players, and he's the first. Neil, what have you made of his performances so far this season?
It's a big question. That's been a bit of a mixed bag. I think by his own standards, He's not reached the levels that we've come to expect from him. He's been quite self-critical in some of his post-match interviews. Is it after the Napoli game where he says he knows he needs to improve, he knows he needs to be better? He's also been quite open when he's been asked about our issues in midfield, where he was saying that we need more midfielders and that success is based on the work rate and the energy of our midfield. The obvious point being that that's not quite present at the moment. I think the system isn't helping Virgil at the moment. I don't think the rest of the team are helping him. The amount of times our defence are basically left to it, you know, sort this one out, boys. They're often little support for them. And I sometimes feel like they can be made to look like idiots, him and Gomez. I sometimes think, you know, when Trent is so far upfield, sometimes also Robertson on opposite flank, but when you've got Fabinho holding fort on his own, I just think they look so exposed, and it seems that time and time again, the opposition's getting a chance to run at our defence. And I just think it's inevitable that, you know, errors will creep in. I don't think it's necessarily a physical thing with Virgil, because we've seen him come back from that horrendous injury and play brilliantly last season. So I don't buy the fact, you know, some people talk about him having lost a yard of pace or lost his sharpness physically. I don't really see that. I think it's more of a mental thing. I think it's maybe a sense of being a bit overwhelmed by responsibility, and maybe not playing with quite the freedom that we're used to seeing from him. It's uncharacteristic, isn't it, to see Virgil giving penalties away. You sort of think, how's that just happened? And you assume that it must be an error. But much as the Mitrovic one was soft, the one against Napoli, I think he had to hold his hands up. And, you know, there's no doubt he was very much culpable against United at Old Trafford, you know, for the opener. So I feel like he's dipped well below his standards, but I think it's more of a mental and a systematic issue rather than, you know, part of like a long-term decline, which is what I'm seeing some people suggest.
I'll read out his comments because you mentioned there what he said after Napoli. He said, I can do much better. If we do well, I obviously get praise. And if we don't, then I don't. But I still think I need to improve, and that's fine. We are good if we perform as a team. And that's the reason behind the success we've had over the last 5 years. We press the team. We defend as a team. And if you start doing it in bits and people are not in the best form of their life, it is tough. Is there a sense, Rob, that maybe this isn't coming down to individuals, as Neil sort of highlighted there, and it is a bit of more of a thing that they're not playing as a unit? They don't look like a solid team. They just look like a group of individuals who are kind of working for themselves and not for the wider cause.
Yeah, I'm uncomfortable entirely digging individuals out during this phase we've been, mm-hmm. because I do think it is a wider malaise. There are one or two conversations you can have about certain individuals' sort of trajectories, I think, over recent months, games, and I know we're going to cover that off. For me, Van Dijk is one of those who is I wasn't going to say beyond reproach still. Yes, if the team dips down, he dips down. But he was at the scene of the crime when Liverpool got beat 7-2 by Villa just before his injury in the pandemic season. He can be playing when things don't go well. When you look at criticising someone who's so obviously such a good footballer like him, you've got to look at, to my mind, you look at two things. Because has he made individual errors? Has he made positional errors? Positionally, I'm not convinced he has. I mean, I've looked at a couple of the goals again, and the one against Ajax most recently, the one that Kudus scores. To me, it's a midfield issue there. It's an abrogation of responsibility by midfielders. So my mind, and maybe I'm being a hypocrite here, dig out might be the wrong reason, but I'm seeing gaps between Fabinho and the two centre-halves that I didn't notice in the past. And I've noticed that a few times this season when a goal's gone in, and go, hang on, where's the midfield? And Fabinho seems, whereas he used to almost be like a third centre-half for us a lot of the time. Maybe a sweeper that plays in front of the two. Not noticed that this season. You've still seen examples of his individual quality. I've referenced before on a couple of shows that thing he does against Rashford at Old Trafford, where he just puts on the burners and eases him out of the way with pace and strength, shows to me, as Neil said, nothing's gone physically there. There are moments where I think of mild complacency, and maybe that's at the root of the whole team malaise. The goal, I think I'm right saying the goal against Palace, where Zaha finishes wonderfully. There's a point where I think Van Dijk's tracking, you thought, just do the thing you do where you block or ease him out of the way. But he overly backs Alisson there. And I almost think that's born of a certain arrogance or a certain overconfidence we had during the tail end of last season, where we were just in a hurry to get the ball up the other end of the pitch. And sometimes we're forgetting to defend routinely. So I think whatever people are identifying Van Dijk will not be identifiable when the team are winning again, is my short summary of it.
Well, yeah, and that's essentially what he said. But Ian, I did think he was much better against Ajax, and I thought the defensive unit as a whole was much better against Ajax. But the goal we conceded, which Rob touched on, it was essentially one through ball and there were gaps in our defence. Do you notice this season that there are a lot more gaps, or do you think it is coming from midfield rather than any blame being put on Van Dijk and Gomez or Matip?
I think for that goal, I think there was the Napoli game where Gomez had an absolute nightmare.
Yeah.
And Gomez had been pretty much one of our best players most of the season so far. He looked really good, but then obviously there was a problem there. Listening to the review show on the Ajax game, Sean made a very good point. The goal is more related to Tsimikas suddenly disappearing halfway up the field than necessarily to Trent not covering properly or the two centre backs actually not being where they're supposed to be. Watching it from, you know, I'm 18 yard box in the main stand basically, so watching it from that point, it just looked like a massive hole in the centre.
But the ball, just talk me through that.
Comes from their left.
It comes down the left, opposite side to Tsimikas. So how's Ian seeing this? Sean seeing this.
Sean, listening to the review show 2 days after, basically there's a challenge up at the left-hand side of the pitch, our left-hand side of the pitch, towards the top end of the pitch, which I think Diaz is involved in a challenge with there right back, if I remember rightly. I'm doing this all from memory now because it's a while since I listened to it. And then suddenly Tsimikas appears on screen. He suddenly runs into the screen. He's suddenly there in a position he doesn't need to be because the man is already being covered. And then the ball goes across.
Yeah.
The ball switches from there. At that point, Trent kind of gets stood up, but the ball, it's a great ball that goes across the middle.
It's not Trent's fault. The ball down the line behind Trent's a great ball.
It's not Trent's fault.
Bailey Blint, I mean, yeah.
And I was looking at the time thinking it's the centre-back's fault because there's a massive hole between them. But Tsimikas has gone, so Virgil's off to the left and Matip was kind of more right. So there is a big hole between the two centre-backs, but because they're covering three positions between the two of them. So I don't think that's systemic. I don't think it's Virgil. I don't think it's a defensive thing. I think it's just something that happened for that particular goal. So I think the Ajax game as a whole, we looked like a unit again. We looked like a Liverpool team again, and we hadn't done for a couple of games. So I think this enforced rest, I know obviously we're now going to an international break that nobody wants or needs, but I think we've had time to actually look at the shape of the team. I also think there's a possible problem that we started playing a high line when VAR was introduced on a certain set of rules for VAR, and they've tweaked VAR this season a little bit. So possibly the line that we're playing, we're having to take into account the tweaking and work out exactly what the tweaking is, because no one's figured out what it really is yet.
Is the tweak, Is this the tweak where if the lines are crossing, it goes to the attacker?
Yeah.
Did that come in last season or not?
Okay. No, that was changed beginning this season.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's an actual close season change to VAR. And so
season was all the dotted lines, wasn't it?
There was some change last season, wasn't there, to make it slightly better than the season before, I think.
They said there was, but nothing actually happened.
No.
United's second goal would have been offside last season.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, really?
Yeah.
And should have been offside this season because you can see his entire foot behind Gomez. So yeah,
the rule is
we're really going back here.
With the thickness, the rule is now that on the lines,
if there's a gap, then you're onside. Mm. But they're still not applying it properly. Weirdly, Champions League applies better, and Europe seems to apply it better. It's just our VAR that can't apply rules properly again.
I do think if we were Ajax fans, we'd have been sat on a post-match show talking about our fabulous goal at Anfield.
Hell of a goal.
Yeah, yeah, you know, talking about our brilliant goal, great move, sweeping pass, great cross.
Incredible finish.
Unbelievable finish. I mean, Virgil has basically, he's got two lads in front of him. He's held them up. He's basically said, go on, then if you can put it in that one top corner, then fair enough. And that's what the lad's done. I feel like sometimes we've got to avoid that kind of Steve McManaman analysis where every goal is the fault of somebody and someone should have done something better.
Did you think the defence was better then in general?
Yeah, I did. And There's a great chance late on, isn't there? The header.
Daily Blint. You
know, yeah. Where I think Trent perhaps could have done better. But overall, I thought we looked a lot more solid. And you are going to concede chances. You can't be hypercritical every time the opposition have an effort on goal. That's not been how we've succeeded under Jürgen. We've not been a team that denies the opposition any chances at all. We're not a team that plays keep ball like Man City and deliberately tries to make the game as sanitised as possible. We play with an element of risk. We're willing to give up a certain amount of chances. It's almost like a percentage thing.
There's always a couple of good clear chances against us, isn't there?
Yeah, always. So
the goal is not a high XG chance, is it? The header is, by the way, but the goal isn't.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm.
Rob, do you think the attackers are approaching him a little bit differently this season? Because we've seen him give away two penalties. We've seen a few little individual mistakes creep into the game. But if we just look quickly at the stats, because I had a look at the goals conceded per match last season, that was 0.68, and obviously a much smaller sample size this year, but it's 1.17 in the Premier League. And a lot of those, you know, are positional things, but some have come down to individual mistakes. And you know, I think there is a sense that attackers are really taking on Virgil a lot more than I did seem to be last season.
I don't know. I mean, this is the problem with stats, as you know, is context. If you're in a bad run, you're in a bad run,
yeah,
which means you're
every
conceding.
Every individual's going to look worse.
You're conceding goals, and you're conceding goals because people have attacked you. And how that's been allowed to happen, again, is a much more complex thing. And it starts certainly with the Liverpool side in, was the pressure on the ball at the front? Was the vaunted pressing game, the intensity there? The intensity's dropped off. And most of the stats, what they do tend to show is Liverpool aren't running around as much. Liverpool aren't putting as many pressures on the ball as they were. Again, this could be a short sample context thing. But if those things aren't present, there is going to be opportunity for people to run at people. So again, it's really difficult to talk about these things in the context of an individual, I think. So my nose is blocked, I can hardly talk. I think come back at the end when Liverpool have gone through a more even phase, and if there's an individual whose level's dropped off in that phase compared to, say, last season, then one can go, yeah, that maybe there's a thing here. But I think where you're conceding goals, you're going to go, well, look, you keep us letting in goals. You know, yeah, that's because we're conceding goals. You know, that stat trumps everything, quite frankly, and then brings everything else into play.
Yeah, Ian, final thing on Van Dijk. Who do you think that his best partnership is with? Obviously, the Gomez thing, it was overshadowed by the Napoli game. But other than that, I didn't think he'd been performing badly. Matip's come back in now. Do you think those two are the best partnership that we have?
I think it's Van Dijk and Matip at the moment, yeah. I think that's, you know, long term Gomez will still come back in. Long term it'll probably be Gomez and Canasi for quite a long time. That's clearly what we're looking to do. But at the moment it's definitely been Matip. There's an understanding between the two, and obviously Van Dijk can sit back. Matip will take the ball forward. I think it's a much more balanced centre back partnership that way.
Yeah, okay, Neil, let's move on to Trent. I think Trent can usually be forgiven for some of his defensive mistakes or lack of awareness with positioning, because he's so good going forward and he has such an impact and such an attacking threat. He's got one goal this season, no assists so far, I don't think. Do you think that there's more of a focus on his the defending side of his game because he hasn't been as much of an attacking threat so far this season?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, if someone's contributing, well, the sort of figures he puts up normally for assists are ridiculous, frankly, aren't they? Better than most attacking midfielders in the league. He creates as many chances as De Bruyne. So with the number of assists dwindling this season, then you are going to focus more, I suppose, on the weaker side of his game. But with Trent, I think we all saw the way his position was tweaked last year with him playing more in field. And for me, all season so far, as short as it's been, there's been an issue on our right flank with Salah, with Trent and with Harvey, that I've just not been sure about the positioning of all three of them, and certainly their cohesion. And I think that we've obviously seen Salah's attacking players suffered, Trent's has. Elliot is so good on the ball and such a technically good footballer. He often does the right thing. So you feel like you're being harsh criticising him, but he does tend to cut inside a lot. And so I sometimes wonder, well, who's providing the width? There's no overlap there. Trent doesn't do it, obviously, as much as he used to. And then we've had Salah instead being the one who's staying really wide, further away from goal. I mean, it's all been documented. For me, again, it's a systematic issue where we're not getting the best, I don't think, out of anyone on that flank currently. So I'm no surprise that Trent has struggled.
Yeah, Ian, Klopp said post-Napoli, we're suffering from a clear drop in determination. We're doing too many things carelessly. We're full of fear and the chaos overwhelms them. For me, Trent is one of those players that you can look at, and it's not about singling anyone out, but he does look a little bit overwhelmed by all the changes that are going on in the team, maybe the chaos, maybe the lack of good results and the fact that the pressure is just building for him a little bit, and he's got no one to come in and replace him. So Robertson, you can bring Tsimikas in for a game and give him that bit of a break. Trent's got no backup there, so he's just having to play without really performing that well.
Yeah, because the backup we did have, we sold, because we bought a new Scottish lad who was going to be the backup. Who arrived with an injury and we haven't seen since. So he is under a lot of pressure. Unless you play Gomez, then that's had its issues in the past as well. I think it is. It's this. Are we going to get on to talk about Harvey at any point? Is he going to be one of the players we talk about?
No, you can talk about him.
Right. I think this is very much part of the issue. The Harvey isn't Jordan Henderson. And if you've got Jordan Henderson playing in the right-hand side of the midfield and he's shuttling up and down, he's doing the covering work and he's doing the real dogged work to support the front, then once that's missing, you've got a different player there, and you've got a player there who is clearly the evolution of the midfield and would have been the evolution of the midfield last season if not for getting injured. But he is there to be more creative. So while the whole world's been going, we need more creative midfielders, well, here's your creative midfielder. He's literally there to be creative. He's there to join in the front four, which means that the lad you've got who's actually just doing all the back-breaking stuff isn't there. So you can't have both, although against Ajax, Harvey was clearly doing more of a Jordan Henderson role. He was playing more of a within-himself role. But if you're evolving the midfield to allow him to have an effect, then for him to have an effect, Salah's going to have to move around a little bit. And Harvey's basically playing in the positions where Trent was popping into last season. So you can't have all these things happening at the same time. So it has to evolve. And at the same time, as you said, Trent has always got the fact there is no one to cover. He had a long season last season. We've started off after a compressed pre-season, a compressed break, where everything's just been rammed close together because of the World Cup. And then we've had this really disturbed start to the season. Now it's not the easiest thing, and every game we've played has had some kind of narrative about it. We don't feel like we started the season at all. And yet, once he's not putting in assists, then people are going to talk about his defending. And we shouldn't be talking about his defending, because we know he can defend. We know it's not a problem. But it's just been an awkward start to the season.
Has he been given a new role, do you think, Rob? Do you think Klopp's asked him to do anything differently, or at least actively told him to be in a slightly different position?
I don't know, is the honest answer. But it has been an evolving role, his.
In what way, though, from last season?
Well, some people may even date it before last season. There were certainly times we were seeing Trent much further infield when he was attacking. So instead of being, from his early phase of his Liverpool career, he's very much playing as a wide midfielder, an overlapping fullback. I remember for his first couple of years, I think there were comparisons with David Beckham a little bit. He was getting chalk in his boots on that right-hand side, not necessarily looking to beat him out or hit the touchline, but in a position, say, 20 yards from goal, by our right-hand side touchline to whip in killer balls. That was Trent's stock and trade. I feel as time's gone by, we've moved him 10 yards forward and 10 yards in to his left infield. He's basically playing, to my mind, as an attacking number eight. That's how the roles evolved, and we sort of play without a fullback. Apart from when, as Ian said, we asked Jordan Henderson to do bits covering in that role, but we do often play effectively without right back. Yeah, Trent, like a right midfielder might, is also expected to get back. But you are going to leave holes if you have him up the pitch all that time.
There is also clearly an instruction to the fullbacks this season that they will both arrive in centre-forward positions in the box or at the edge of the box, because Robertson did it the first three games running.
This is the inverted fullback, yep. Attacking fullback thing.
Which both is, inverted fullbacks.
Both inverted fullbacks, which is a modern vogue. I think it's difficult to say if something's going wrong or right, in as much as, well, clearly we're, what, seven games in, including the European Cup games? And
eight, I think.
Is it eight including those? Is it six league, two European, two Champions League? Something like that, in which we've only won three. And in those three, we've played well for most of the game. The three, albeit there were late wins in two of them, we still played well and deserved the wins. And whatever was going on was going with Trent on the right-hand side was actually going well in those games. In fact, I mean, against Bournemouth, you know, Trent scores a world-class goal. Harvey Elliott does as well. Salah makes assist after assist. It works really well. And you'd probably say it did work quite well in some of the other games, but then in others it hasn't. But we have had this sort of shifting guard, as Ian said, between Harvey and Jordan Henderson in terms of who's in what position. So there are things we're finding out, and it's difficult to sort of bed in new systems, again, judge new systems when the whole isn't correct. The key thing in the quotes you read out there, I think, my opinion, is Klopp saying about post-Napoli is the determination wasn't there. Now, that's a big indictment, quite frankly. That, again, plays into the intensity thing, the pressing, that is our signature. But if that isn't there, I don't care what system you play, it's going to look poor. Everything is, and especially throwing wrinkles of newness, like having a new kid like Harvey Elliott there.
And it's also difficult to bed in the new system that you've decided you're going to go with when your centre-forward decides to nut somebody.
Yeah, it doesn't help.
It doesn't help at all, because at that point, then this new system that you've got with this lad who plays there is actually changed for bringing Firmino on, who's going to play there. So it's just, you know, the system is automatically not working as it should work, because you've got two completely different players having to interchange, basically having to bring Bobby back in for three games where you would have been playing Nunes.
We did see another, sorry, no, just my final, we did see another glimpse of this working, I'm forgetting about, and it does count, the Community Shield.
Yeah.
Where Liverpool overwhelm Man City, and the new number nine scores a goal, plays really well when he comes on. Trent scores a great goal, albeit a bit deflected. So there was another big example of the system working. It's clearly the consistency of determination, as Klopp calls it, to my mind.
It does seem that sometimes people are quick to blame Trent. They want to rush to blame him for things. We're talking about Klopp and determination. I can think of goals we've conceded this season where clips have then done the rounds online, which people suggesting showing Trent giving up, mm-hmm. or Trent not maybe making as much effort as he should do to deal with an issue. But I do think what he believes in his teammates, and sometimes you've literally passed it on to your teammates, you know. But the other thing I think is there's a real media spotlight on him with the World Cup coming up, and he's the story. Trent's probably the biggest willy won't he story with the England squad. I never really like to speculate about what's going through players' minds and how they're feeling about things, because we just don't know. If he was here, he might say, well, I don't feel any pressure through that.
You can't shut it off though, can you? You can't shut off the external noise about whether you are going to get a spot, and he'll be playing with that in the back of his mind, consciously or subconsciously.
Yeah, there's constant articles now that, mm-hmm. you know, you see them every other day. Is he going to be the one who's left out? And we're all aware, and he's aware, what a special footballer he is, just how much he brings to the table and how great he's been for so long. And that there's even a discussion whether or not a player as creative and as gifted as him will be part of the England squad. It is just frankly ludicrous. It's just insane that there could be any world in which you wouldn't find a role for him in the squad, even if he wasn't going to be part of your starting 11. But it feels to me like there's a real sort of swell of opinion that he shouldn't even be going out there at all. He shouldn't be part of the, 23-man squad?
It's 25 now.
25, yeah. So I can't help but feel that must be at least in the back of his mind a little bit, that, you know, there's a pressure on him to perform not just you know, in terms of as a Liverpool player, there's a pressure on him to perform because of, I mean, how old is he now? 25?
No, not even that.
Not even that?
I think it's 23.
23, yeah. He seems like he's been around forever. Mm. But, the, you know, the only so many, my point was going to be only so many World Cups come around in your career so easily. He's already missed one tournament, I think, for injury. You know, so easily, your career in the blink of an eye, and you've never gone to a World Cup, you've never been part of that. That's a dream. That's something he'll want to fulfil. So I just feel that maybe there's an extra burden on him at the moment, and it's just being drummed up and drummed up.
His performance against Alex O'Neill was much better, I thought, along with a lot of individuals in the team. I liked that he didn't play an overly defensive role, because I think it would have been really easy for him to sit quite far back and make sure that the defensive side of his game was perfect so that he didn't get all the criticism. But he was still really getting into those attacking positions, taking shots on goals, trying to provide more assists and stuff. He wasn't just sitting back and playing quite deep, which I thought was positive.
Yeah, you can't curtail what's made him such a success. He can't change his game overnight. He can't decide to suddenly become a conservative player. That's not what Jürgen wants. That's not what he wants. Not what any of us want from him.
Unfortunately, it's what Gareth Southgate's going to want.
Well, that may be one issue. But I think it's more of a tweaking, isn't it? It's more of a tweaking of his role in the team than suddenly suggesting that we need to clip his wings in some way. He is one of the best attacking players in the world. Mm-hmm. He just so happens to be nominally deployed at right back. So we've just got to keep faith with him. And I think once the team as a whole, you know, balances out and we go through a spell where we're, you know, recording wins, just routine wins, I think all of a sudden, you know, hopefully the debate around Trent will diminish and we'll see more. He can just play his natural game.
I think there's the debate around Trent in England, I think it is quite an important one in a certain sense. And I think it just gets political too quickly. And all parties get a little bit culpable in this one. I sort of sympathise with Gareth Southgate in one respect. Is he doesn't know or cannot play how Jurgen Klopp sets a Liverpool team up. He wants to set up with a right back. He's got his own vision, and that's not an unreasonable thing in football. I want a right back who plays like a right back, who defends first and foremost. And he's got a lot of them available at the moment, which is, you know, a surfer of riches to a degree. And was it Reece James at the moment? Is he the man in possession, I suppose? Probably. Yeah. Pick one or two others. So Trent isn't going to play the right-back role that Gareth wants. And that's not unreasonable from his point of view. But he is of an elite level. So therefore, it's right that the conversation moves into, and Southgate tried it once and it didn't work, how could England use Trent Alexander-Arnold in midfield? And if I was Southgate and I was married to the system I was married to, I would look at that more. I don't think it necessarily helped. I don't want to be critical of Jürgen, but at the time that happened, that experiment failed for half an hour. Jürgen sort of poured very cold water on the idea of Southgate even trying Trent in midfield, and even said, well, for God's sake, if you're going to try him in midfield, play him as a six, right? Which is a whole other conversation, considering he's never played there in his career.
Well, Southgate's trying to fit him in, isn't he? So he can't really be criticised for trying to use him when he is, Neil mentioned, one of the best players attacking in the world.
It is an unusual problem. I think everyone should step back a little bit from the debate and go, how do we do this? Because Liverpool have decided to find this very unusual role, a right-back who plays as a number eight. It's really, really innovative. I can't think of many other teams in the world who are doing that with right-backs. So how do you solve this problem that he gets, being one of the top four or five English players in the world, arguably? How does he get in that team? I mean, as a Liverpool fan, I must stress, I don't care. Right? I'd rather he didn't go. But I'm thinking from a Trent perspective, for his mental health, you know, he wants to play, as you've said, Neil, in a World Cup. I'd like to see the debate go to a mature level and think, okay, it's a problem. Let's try and solve it. And it's not always about arguing Reece James or Trent Alexander the better right back. There are other ways of solving it.
But it's like you say, it's not really a problem. You know, what a great problem to have. We've got one of the world's best attacking players.
Yeah.
And can we find a way to utilise him for the national team? You know, can he be a great impact sub? Can he be someone who helps us change a game? Maybe his role will be off the bench. I don't know. Like you say, I don't want to get too much into England and what suits them in the tournament. But I think it's being presented as this great problem, this great issue, whereas really it's just like an interesting tactical option, really.
Yeah.
I do think he should be on the plane. I do think he should be going to Qatar. I think it would be crazy if he's not part of the England squad. But I do hope it's resolved sooner or later, really. I mean, obviously, so it's not that long now till it happens. But I think perhaps post-World Cup, maybe we'll see a different Trent Alexander-Arnold.
I think he definitely makes a squad, but we will see on that one. Let's move into the midfield with Thiago. Ian, I thought his performance against Ajax was just exactly what you expect from Thiago. I'll go through the stats. I know how much you love them. 89% passing accuracy, 10 recoveries, 100 accuracy with long balls, 13 passes into the final third. Probably not ideal that we had to keep him on for the majority of the game, but it's just that element of control that he brings to the midfield, which is unlike any other player we have.
Yeah, I love all those stats. It's the XG and XGA and XG chains and all that nonsense that I can't be bothered with. I know it's not nonsense. I know people like it. I can't be dealing with it. I'm far too old. He's one of the best midfielders in world football. It's the top and bottom of the whole thing. He's an absolute joy to watch. As long as we can keep him fit and keep him on the field, he runs the game. He runs the team. This idea that people had last season that he slowed the game down in some way, it's kind of like, you're just not quick enough to watch what he's actually doing. It's your problem. It's not his. He's a genius. He's an absolute genius. You know, just a little drop of the shoulder that can take a man out of the game altogether. Just that there was a lovely little dummy from a crossfield ball that opened the whole game up on whatever night we were watching, it Tuesday night. He's impeccable. He's a joy to watch. He's a generational footballer, and we're privileged to have watched him. And if you could keep him fit, if he didn't pick up knocks, and he might not pick up another knock for the rest of the season, but if you could keep him fit, he's a player who'd play till 35, 36 and at the same speed, because it's not about pace, it's about vision, it's about awareness, it's about what he can do with the ball and nobody else in the field's doing. He's genius.
Yeah, Rob, what stood out for me was his leadership, and not in a traditional sense, and that he's telling everyone where to be and what to do. He was obviously very hungry, very keen to be back on the pitch, but he just raised everyone else's game by virtue of the fact that he was so good and so impressive, really getting stuck in to tackles, winning ground duels. He was just a really determined figure, and I think that transpired throughout the whole team.
Yeah, I think the stage has been set for this comeback for Thiago by Liverpool's form, and his cameo in Naples, and Klopp rightly praised him for it, because he was the guy putting the pressures in, which the others hadn't been doing, is, I think, gave him a boost coming back from an injury. And, you know, he really lived up to his billing against Ajax. I thought he was fantastic. He's an unusual player in that my life as a Liverpool supporter, in that I want to see him play every single game, but I'm sort of aware that there's a problem if that's the case, because he won't. He is an injury-prone player. There's no doubting. His injury record at Bayern was such, and his injury record at Liverpool has been of an injury-prone player. So Liverpool have to be very careful. So unfortunately, I think he, therefore, when we get him on the pitch, we have to see him as something of a positive luxury. This is, I mean, not a lot of people don't want to hear this. They think we're building our team. We can't quite build a midfield around Thiago because of the availability issue. I think he can be the cherry on the top of the cake, and I think we should aim for him to be that. I think we got to a sweet spot with him towards the tail end of last season where we'll be able to manage his games. In fact, just with the right run of momentum with injuries last season, we were able to manage games of a lot of our midfielders in a way we haven't been able to this season through bad luck, which then, you know, encourages more bad luck. So I could say the same things about Jordan Henderson and to a lot lesser extent Naby Keita. It'd be nice to be able to use these sort of players, these really elite midfield players, as and when we need them. And Thiago's another case in point. So I'm, on the one hand, I'm really happy he's back, really enjoying the football he's serving up, but also nervous that we now think we have to have Thiago on the pitch for our next 10 games to win football matches, because it isn't going to happen.
Is it a case of finding a way to adapt without him there? Because at the moment, the drop-off is so large that he is probably the player, would you agree, that we miss the most when he's not available?
Well, it's felt like that this season, certainly. 100% would say that. I wouldn't necessarily say that last season, because I think we played some magnificent sets of games when he wasn't available, and fantastic games when he was available. I think a lot of the stats you see show that there is a sort of correlation between him and Fabinho being on the pitch and Liverpool's win rate being really high. I'm a little bit sceptical about those correlations, because I think you can sort of spin them in many directions. But there is no doubt he's a fantastic influence on any Liverpool team he steps out for. But you're right, we do have to find a way of playing really well when he's not playing. I mean, we have done this season. He did play against City in the Community Shield and played very, very well. But he doesn't play against Bournemouth, for example, and we managed to find a way. So there are games where we played well without him, and I think we need to continue to find ways to play well without him while still enjoying him.
Yeah, Neil, the defensive side of his game is one that probably goes under the radar because of his vision and the way he passes and its accuracy. But that was probably something that you saw in the Ajax game that we'd miss the most, that sense of control in that midfield area.
Yeah, his pressing is really impressive. He knows when to go. His timing's always good. Some of his tackles are wild, but I like the fact he throws in a wild tackle, loves a slide tackle. But he's so press resistant in a way that Gini was. That we've not really had since Wijnaldum left, apart from when Thiago is on the pitch. Our team know if they give the ball to Thiago, we're keeping the ball. It's very, you know, occasionally maybe a careless pass from him, but 9 times out of 10, he's not giving the ball away, which relieves pressure. He helps us bring the ball forward. There's no stat for that dummy, I don't think. That outrageous,
there should be
for that outrageous dummy we saw. His all-round game is just at such a high elite level that we are going to clearly miss him when he's not available. Artemelo has been sold in some quarters as a almost Thiago light style player. That remains to be seen.
Pound shop Thiago is the technical term.
Little Thiago, yeah. We're yet to see whether he can come in and perhaps give us something of the same attributes in Thiago's absence. I did think we managed his minutes really well last season. There seemed to me to be a lot of games where he was getting hooked around 65, 70 minutes. You know, job was done and he was being saved and wrapped in cotton wool for the next fixture. But then we did find ourselves in a position where at least two cup finals we've gone into where his fitness has been a huge concern. One where he's obviously pulled up just before in the League Cup final, and then the Champions League final where he just clearly wasn't at his best.
Had to play with pain-killing injections.
And there's no doubt that we are diminished greatly, I think, when he's not on the field, because he's of such quality. This daft North versus South team idea that Todd Bowley's raised, you know, people are sat drawing up their teams. Well, Thiago's straight into it for the North. You know, Thiago's straight in there with... He's a player that you could see walking into City's midfield. We always praise City's midfield, their level. Well, Thiago is absolutely at that level. He's a fantastic footballer, but we can't be certain. If only he was as durable as Mo Salah, if only he was a player who you could count on every single week, but we can't. So,
in a way, could you see him being more respected or playing more often than... Because I think we probably ask more physically of him then I think a Guardiola team might be. This is just purely hypothetical. I mean, he said last season, Klopp taught me how to run, was his quote, right? Which does show that he's being asked to do more work than he's had to do previously in his career. Now, he was injured before Klopp came along and made him run. But still, I do wonder if he could just sort of showcase his talents on the ball more in that sort of team. Not that I'm advocating he move to City. Yeah. I think he might be appreciated at an even greater level. Like, he might be a first name on the Spain team sheet for a start.
Possibly. I mean, the Spanish situation, talk about Trent. I mean, that's even more baffling. In what world have you not got space in your squad for Thiago? I mean, that's just unreal. Yet certainly everyone in our team has got to work so hard. And I don't think we're in a position where we can allow one player to ease off or one player to be given a reduced role or lesser responsibilities. I don't think there's a way we can manage that. And I don't. Thiago doesn't play like that to me either. He's very much all action. He's all action performance. He was everywhere, wasn't he, on Tuesday night? So I don't think you could constrain him in that way, or say, you know, give us 70% Thiago. It's a difficult situation. Melo, I am. I do think the two of them are linked. I do think that we talk about Artemelo and him not coming straight into the team. Is that a surprise to anyone? You know, I didn't expect us to bring someone alone at the last day of the transfer window and him to just walk into the team. Playing for Klopp is such a specific role and so demanding that it may well be we don't even see him for 2 months. But hopefully once he's available, maybe we can alternate the pair. And as I say, you know, the game's won. Thiago's hooked on 60. Then we have half an hour run out from Arta.
Allow them to sort of share the role almost, Yeah.
I think we miss Thiago because we also haven't got anyone who can substitute for him, because Jones and Keita are injured at exactly the same time. And who would be taking that position?
Yeah.
And notably Bournemouth, Henderson has his best game as a left-sided midfielder for us.
Let's move through to the forward line then. We'll do Diaz and Salah together. Like Thiago, Diaz is another player, Rob, who I think has been performing really well, even in the midst of a bad run of form for Liverpool. I just think he's really impressive, the effort he puts in, the determination, the fact he never stops running. His performances have been, has been one of the standouts for me.
Yeah, I mean, it is. There's no doubt it's a sign of a player if he can stand out in a team that's struggling. That's, Diaz just has done that. I mean, he impressed everyone last season. The only murmurings were about the end product. People wanted a few more goals from him, a couple more assists maybe. But even then, I felt that was harsh at the time. I thought he was only there post-January. So the six he scored and three assists or whatever, the goal involvement, if you'd scaled that to a full season, it was perfectly respectable. And that's whilst ignoring everything else he does. I think it's incredible how like Sadio Mane is at times, although stylistically, you know, their bodies move in slightly different ways. They're not the same footballer, the same person. But just his ability to get out of tight spaces and emerge with a football reminds me of Sadio. He gets us up the pitch. He keeps us up the pitch. He keeps things ticking over. And games don't go by where you go, Luis Diaz didn't have a good shot at goal or wasn't very close to being to scoring. And here he is, effectively our top scorer. He scored two unbelievable goals. Whatever anyone's perception of Liverpool's future is and how we should set up and who the personnel should be, Luis Diaz is all but number one name on my team sheet going forward at the moment.
When Sadio Mane leaves in the summer, and that's probably one of the biggest concerns, how are we going to fill his role in the team? But actually, for all the problems that Liverpool have had, filling Sadio Mane's role has not been one of them with Diaz's introduction and how he stepped into it.
No, I was concerned about filling Sadio Mane's role from about the third game of the season to the fourth game of the season, and that was it. I wasn't concerned when he went because, as I've banged on about ad nauseam at the moment, for 18 months we all wanted Sadio Mane sold so we could keep Salah because Sadio Mane wasn't doing the job that we thought he should do. Then we moved him into the middle of the park and for 6 months he was fantastic again. But we forget that for 18 months before that we were all complaining about him all the time. So all the people who were saying we were missing Sadio, they weren't saying that when he was playing for us. So it was just nothing but complaints. I think we filled his vacancy perfectly with Diaz. I think Diaz is a fantastic footballer. I think for me, he reminds me more of Luis Suarez. That unpredictability, again, the way he comes out of a challenge, you can have four lads challenging him. He'll come out with the ball and you won't have a clue how he's done it, but he will do it. And he's also got that from the very first game where he just suddenly appears on the touchline and passes it into the box from there. And you're like, where the hell did that lad come from? He's fitted immediately. He's got the pace. He's got the vision for it. He will have a world-class shot every single game. I think there was a moment in the Palace game where he decides that he's going to win it single-handedly after Nunes has been sent off. And he has the space to do it because the space he wanted to be in was exactly where Nunes was playing. And it's notable, as soon as we're down to 10 men, he then has the freedom to play the way he wanted to play in the first place. So we do need time to integrate Darwin and Diaz so they can swap and change as they need to. As Jota and Diaz were doing at the weekend, sorry, not the weekend, Tuesday. I don't know what day anything is anymore. but I think he's the key going forward. I think at the moment there's a lot more space between Diaz and Salah than there needs to be. I think we need both of them towards the edge of their respective edge of the box to be more of a threat. But I don't know what Jürgen's plan is at the moment. I don't know what Jürgen and Pep have decided they're doing. I know from I'm reading Pep's book at the moment, which is a very long read. It's very slow. It's the driest book I've ever read in my life.
But the reviews are out. Three stars.
There's a lot of detail in it. I don't think I'm following all the detail, but there are some absolute nuggets in there when you hit them and you find things like, Curtis Jones. You appreciate what Curtis Jones does in terms of what they ask him to do. You appreciate what Milner does in terms of being the assistant manager on the field. So you appreciate how this club works. And I may not be the right person to be reading it. Probably needs somebody with a coaching brain to read it rather than me. He doesn't talk about XG, which is always a good thing. But you appreciate what they want of the players and what they're actually asking in the system and what they changed at the beginning of last season in terms of they're saying, this is what we've changed. And we don't know what they've changed this season, what they're asking. It's been so disrupted that we won't tell until somewhere around Christmas, by which time we might look like another iteration of the best team on the planet.
Yeah, Neil, let's bring Salah into the conversation. Ian there mentioned that Diaz has been quite far out wide, and I think you can probably say the same for Salah. They feel a little bit too dragged out at times, and there was conversations around whether that was intentional, but then Klopp came out after the United game and basically confirmed that it wasn't. Do you think that that's the reason that Salah in particular, his impact has diminished over the course of the start of the season?
Possibly. I don't want to call Jurgen a liar. But I do think sometimes he's not going to come out in post-match interviews. So yes, it's all my plan that's going wrong.
Yeah. I do think he would take responsibility though. And if he had told Salah to go further out wide, I do think he would have fronted that. But he's saying he didn't even think he was that far out wide, but we can watch it.
Yeah, I think we've all seen with our eyes noticeably he's been less central and less involved. I do think, again, it's very early in the season, and for all sorts of reasons, this attack hasn't had much chance to gel. If you're asking me, do we miss Sadio, the left winger? No, we don't. Have we missed Sadio, the centre forward? Well, yes. You know, if Sadio had been here and playing number nine for the opening few weeks of the season, I think we'd have more points on the board. But the thing is, our new centre forward was suspended for 3 games because he headbutted someone. Jota's been injured. So there's caveats, isn't there? They need time to play together. This new lineup, this new attack, especially if Darwin's involved. Talking there about the potential for Darwin and Diaz interchanging on the left, with Diaz going more central and Darwin drifting out to the left, the positions he used to take up for Benfica. The only way you can build up those relationships is minutes on the pitch, and they just simply not had it. And Salah, I think, has to find himself within a new way of working. Bobby came in against Bournemouth and almost gave us a dose of vintage Bobby. He almost rolled back the years and we saw what we've been used to seeing for so long. But I don't think Firmino's capable of doing that week in, week out now. He seems to be naturally dropping deeper as his legs aren't quite what they were. So I feel like it's a time of transition. And so I don't think we can be judging anyone too harshly at a time when clearly they are adapting, clearly this attack is evolving. With Salah, I found it just strange that he seems comfortable at times playing so wide. You just assume that he would naturally drift towards the centre, that he'd want to get more involved, that he'd want to be getting off more shots. There was a match a couple of weeks ago, I'm trying to think which game it was now, where the whole first half he didn't have a single shot on goal. And that's just so far removed from what we're used to seeing. So I have been a little bit concerned about Salah. Of all the players we've mentioned today, Mo's been the one that's given me the most cause for concern. Because I think you said on the show the other day, Rob, we're talking about a player who a year ago was in the conversation for the best player in the world. And he's been so far below that, that there is some issue there. But I do think time is probably the biggest thing that this attack line needs at the moment.
Yeah, his goals per game pre-AFCON were 0.88 and post-AFCON they're 0.33, and that extends into this season. Do you sense that this season in particular he's trying to create room for others at the detriment of his own success and his own position in the game?
I just don't think that's how Mo Salah works. I know people have been in a hurry in the past to call him a selfish footballer. I think he's a focused footballer who is very much of the mind that Mo Salah scoring loads of goals is good for the team he plays in. And he's prepared at times to put the blinkers on and stand his man up, look to beat him, get a shot away. We're not seeing that Mo Salah at the moment. And I don't think it's a selflessness thing, all of us. I don't think he's a newfound philanthropist for new centre forwards. I don't think that's how he
but
works.
But it is transitional, isn't it? So he'll have to be working at how he can assist Nunes when he is playing, or going back to an old position when Firmino or Jota's in there. So it's difficult while he's chopping and changing and they're trying to get used to playing in this new style.
I think so. I think there were signs that him and Nunes were dovetailing really quite nicely in the Community Shield.
They have, when he's come on as well, I think.
Fulham. I mean, he puts two great balls into the box for Nunes, one of which he scores and one of which he's unlucky not to score with against Fulham.
And in the Palace game as well.
And in the Palace game. I think my issue, I think something happened to Mo on the back of AFCON, the psychological blow. I mean, it seems obvious to say in a certain sense, but that followed by the blow getting knocked out of the World Cup qualification did seem to jolt his season. There was the backdrop of the contract discussions. I also, you know, people want to think he's a mature footballer. He's still a relatively young man. and all the acclaim he got in the first half of last season, when he had that scoring rate of 0.8 a game, when he was being called the best player in the world, it's quite a journey he would have gone on, even within the context of the highs of his stellar career to date. So he was dealing with that approbation and the fact that people were saying he's on course for being the Ballon d'Or winner, you know, the best footballer in the world. Then the rug gets pulled from under him quite significantly with those two international tournament setbacks. And it then doesn't go for him and he looks frustrated. And his return in the second part of last season after AFCON is not good at all. It's not elite by any stretch. It's decent, but it's not elite. Actually, it's not even that decent if you take out the penalties, I think, post-AFCON. So my long-winded conclusion is that he's lacking in confidence. I mean, to be the player he's been, you have to be supremely confident, and he still will be confident, but there's degrees of confidence. And to me, that going wider is a consequence of him wanting to find space, because he's not backing himself in the tighter spaces he once would have backed himself. That's how I'm reading this as happening. He's not being instructed to. It's just an instinct to just drop back 5 yards, 10 yards, to where you can receive the ball with relative safety and know that you've got time to lift your head up. 10 yards further in, you're getting clattered straight away. So have you got the confidence for that first touch, that first drop of the shoulder? Do you back yourself that to be right and you to come the other side of it? Confident Salah does. Not so confident Salah isn't so sure.
He did get a goal against Ajax, so that will give him a boost heading into the international break and beyond.
Yeah, and he got a goal from the position we expect him to. And possibly that might have been assisted by the fact that Jota played as the false nine in the same way that Bobby did it, in the same way vintage Bobby did, and had an excellent game there. So the space for him to move into was present. And this could be the whole thing. We've not had the season. We've not had the start of the season we expected. Everything's been disrupted. Every position's been disrupted. We're trying out new things in a new system. We've been hit by injuries. And there's the knock-on effect of the fact that we played 65 games last season. So everyone's suffering a bit. Salah wasn't talked about as being possibly the greatest player in the world this time last year. Salah was the greatest player in the world this time last year. Top and bottom of it, there's no argument in that for me. He was the best player on the planet at that point in time. Doesn't mean that you always are, but he was for that. Certainly for that 3 months, he was definitely the outstanding player in the world game. He'll get back to that level. And, you know, the idea of him being a selfish player, forward should be selfish. Ian Rush was quite a selfish footballer. I know, because Bob Paisley told him to go out and be a selfish footballer. It works. So Salah's shooting when Salah wants to shoot. I don't think you take that out of him. I think that's a natural thing. So I don't think it's a choice he's made that. You know, he did set up more assists last season than he's ever done before. And I know he was proud of the fact, because, you know, they talked about it at the end of the season. But he will still want to score goals. And he'll get back to that.
Final word, a positive. Oh, go on, Neil.
I was going to say, yeah, there was. He's obviously had to deal with a lot of disappointment, but also it was levelled at him personally, I think, is a big part of this. This failure. It's not like Egypt failed in AFCON. Egypt failed in the World Cup. All players have to deal with that kind of disappointment. It's the fact that, from what I understand, in Egypt, it was very much put, you know, at his door, that he's the one who should have got them over the line. He's the one who should have got them to the World Cup.
Because so much of the hope was placed on him.
Yeah, and then even in the Champions League final, it felt like a big narrative going in was Salah getting his chance at revenge against Real Madrid. He almost put that... He was the one who brought that up, really, you know, in that interview in Villarreal. He's making it clear that's how he saw it. And obviously, it didn't go his way in Paris. I think he needs to just get into a rhythm again where things are natural and it's coming easy to him and he's not perhaps overthinking. When Jota came in on Tuesday, it looked to me like all of a sudden you could just see Mo thought, I know exactly how this works. We both trust each other. We both link up so naturally. Jota's pressing was just phenomenal. The whole team benefited from that. If we're getting Diaz, Jota and Salah on the pitch, which I think more often than not will be Klopp's go-to over the coming weeks if those three players are available, then I do think the goals will start to flow. Because those three players have got so much quality and they know each other, they know their game.
Yeah, international break, but still plenty to talk about, clearly. Do download the Anfield Wrap app. Dan Morgan is doing a review-style stat show looking at the season so far. So if you're interested in anything we've spoken about, I'm sure he'll dive a lot deeper into those from a stats perspective. We also did a deep dive on the midfield last week, so do download the app and you can get some free tokens to listen to that. Go and buy your tickets for the Merseyside Derby for Anfield next weekend. And other than that, enjoy your international break. Thanks to Ian, thanks to Neil, thanks to Rob and to Andy for producing. See you next time.
Sports Social Podcast Network.